Hello, okay. I'm not sure how many of the questions will actually pertain to meditation tonight. So if anyone feels they might be distracted or bored, no one's obliged to stay. Also, for any of the questions that we feel we're not able to answer adequately or we don't can't answer, we'll leave that aside for Ajahn Brahm for tomorrow so that everyone's question gets proper care and attention. So we thought we'd begin just by very briefly introducing ourselves so you know what our names are, who we are, where we're from. So my name is Venerable Analia. I ordained as a novice at Dhammasara Monastery in 2013, and in 2016 I took a bhikkhuni ordination.
My name is Venerable Jyotika. I joined Dhammasara Nuns Monastery at Gijiganap in 2014. I ordained as a novice in 2015, and in 2017 I took my higher ordination as a bhikkhuni.
My name is Venerable Jolko. I'm from Brisbane, and I took my first ordination in 2011 in Tibetan Buddhism, hence why my colours are different. And then in 2018, I took bhikkhuni ordination with Ajahn Brahm and Ayo Santini.
I'm Seminary Sangapa from Newbury, Victoria. Newbury is supported by BSV. We call that Buddhist Monastery of Victoria, and I think that you know well about Dhammasara, but let me introduce a little bit about Newbury Monastery. We have been built for a fourfold community, so bhikkhu, bhikkhunis, laymen and laywomen to come and practice together. At the moment that the monk size building, hopefully it will be complete next year. So we hope that more monk coming, and usually at the moment we have two monks from Ajahn Brahm stay with us helping the building, and later on when it's been well established, we hope that we can ordain and train monks in Newbury. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether you have indicated which nun to answer, like last, what Ajahn Brahm was said, nun number one, number two, number three, number four last night. So we're just picking up the questions as we go, and then, yeah, and with.
Well, they fight over who answers, so they don't fight. It says, for the Tibetan nun, can you briefly explain how your tradition differs from the Theravadan practice? Thank you. So we're taught in Tibetan Buddhism that there's two differences in the view, the philosophy of how you become enlightened. So there's like an added extra emptiness of phenomena as well as self. And also in the method side, which is the motivation that you do your practice. So it's to be infused with great compassion. So other than that, very similar, the whole basis of Tibetan Buddhism is based on Theravadan practices with just these couple of extra additions. I personally find with Ajahn Brahm's teachings that he includes those. He might not use the terms that we use, but I feel that there's so many similarities that the technical differences are way above my pay grade, and so I don't worry about that. So.
I have a few questions for Verba and Alia.
I'll just do one and then. Okay. Dear Venerable Analia, apart from the suttas, which Buddhist author, teacher do you like best and why? And can you please quote something from this person that touches you deeply? Thank you kindly. Well, I'll give a quote from the sutta just because this is just the first thing that came to my mind. But I'm paraphrasing from the suttas, I'm not quoting. But it says apart from the suttas. Can I quote from the sutta? It's a very nice one. It's I think it's from the Anguttara 3s, if I'm not mistaken. But it basically goes something like this. The Buddha said, where there is a place where, I don't know if he probably said bhikkhus, but if bhikkhus are, or monastics are quarreling and, you know, speaking to each other in ways that are very harsh, like daggers, I think he said something like, He wouldn't even want to turn his mind in that direction, let alone to go there. And when he knows of a place that the community or the people, doesn't have to be monastic community, but that is the situation, then he infers that they must have abandoned three things and cultivated three other things. And the three things they have abandoned is the three right intentions. So they have abandoned renunciation. They have abandoned non-ill will. They have abandoned kindness. And they have abandoned non-harming. So they have abandoned gentleness. And then it goes on to say, and in another place where the community, I hope I'm getting this right, where the community is, you know, living harmoniously, and treating each other with kindness, that he infers, that he infers they have cultivated three things and they have abandoned three other things. So they have abandoned the wrong intentions, they have abandoned, sensual, seeking for sensual pleasures, they have abandoned ill will, they have abandoned harming. And that they have been cultivating renunciation, kindness, and gentleness. And he says, how does he say it? It's very, very beautiful. Sorry, I'm messing it up. But, he would be so happy to, so happy to go there. Not to speak of turning his mind in that direction. I think I might have gotten it confused. But it reminds me of what Bianca, I don't know if Bianca still says this at the beginning of the retreat, where she says, make your room like so clean that the Buddha would want to come. Does she still say that? No, okay. Well, she would say that, but I always found that very inspiring, not just for my external space, but my internal space, to make my internal space welcoming for the Buddha or for noble beings, to make my mind filled with good qualities as best as I can, so that, the Buddha in that, why I mentioned that sutta is the Buddha would want to go to those places where the community is harmonious and treating each other well, but so too in our own mind, I feel the Buddha, I am inferring, this is not his words, but he would want to plant seeds of Dhamma in minds that are, where it's conducive. So when I think, that's the least I can do. Maybe I can't grow Dhamma or I can't grow enlightenment. But if I can make my mind a conducive place, I have faith that something will grow there. Okay.
Yeah, often at the end of the retreat, and Bianca tried to get everybody to clean their room. He says, make your room as clean so that the Buddha wants to come. I'm just going to pick up a random one. Dear nuns, I think your dedication and commitment is so inspiring. What inspires your practice? Thank you. What inspires my practice? You guys. You know, to be able to live interdependent as a monastic with lay supporters is very, very inspiring for me. Like in the West, Buddhism in the West, I come from the East, where sometimes it's taken for granted that, you know, you see a monastic, you just go bow and support the person. But not so much in the West, because you get tested, you are questioned, you know, a lot of it. And we work very hard to also renew our faith in the practice itself so that we are able to answer questions. And having people come support the nuns' monastery is also very, very inspiring. Like they come all the way, they cook from early in the morning, come feed us, and we walk and collect our arms around. And I just see the happiness in their face. They come help clean up later. And it's really inspiring. And there's some of them come stay at our monastery to just help us with you know, our daily chores and all. And also to benefit the peace and calm in the monastery, to be with the nuns. And that's pretty inspiring to want to be with us, you know. And that's really part of my renewed practice. I go back to my hut. I live in a little hut, very simple hut. No electricity, no toilet. Then I reflect what happened today. Where did I get my food from? You know, really. And where did I get this hut from? It's all from the donations, from the hard work that people put in. People come to the monastery and help us to clean the place so that it's bushfire friendly, hopefully. Yeah. Lots of things that people do and they don't see it. But for me, that really inspires. We will clean the toilets, we will clean the hall for that. People can come and use it. So that's okay. So again and again, monastic, we live interdependent with each other. So that's really nice to remember that all the time for me and my practice.
Dear nuns, what are your thoughts about gender issues, gender equality in Buddhism? Thank you. We did have a system that we were just passing along, but I think this was loaded for me. Because I actually studied this at university. I worked in it before I became a nun, and then I joined a patriarchal institution and kind of went, oh, what have I done? because in Tibetan Buddhism, we don't... It's like Thai Buddhism. We don't have full ordination for nuns. It is starting with in one lineage, but most of us have to go outside, or we all have to go outside our tradition. And I personally, I don't agree with that. I think times have changed, and nuns existed 2,600 years ago. The Buddha said women were as equally capable of becoming enlightened. And I feel that, you know, we have equality, gender equality now in many places, and it's time will come in the Dharma. Causes and conditions, you know, the Dharma goes into a country and changes the country, but the country changes the Dharma. And I think that's what the West has brought an element of that gender equality. And there's some more traditional thinkers that don't want to change, and you know, many people agree with them and many people don't. So I personally feel that it's important that we have equality, so that, you know, nuns get to be, you know, have their own monasteries and can, you know, have supporters and have all the conditions that they need for their practice. So I have much gratitude to people like Ajahn Brahm, and who actually go out of their safety zone and
have some detractors, but they make a physical and psychological support for their nuns and nuns from other communities. So, my thoughts.
Actually, before we come here, we talk about this question. So I'll just read out. To all venerables, why do you want to become nun? Any challenge from your family members? Thank you. So we just like talk with between the nuns, like this is should be the question that you usually have. So it's very common that everyone's very inspired why you want to become a nun, why you want to become a monastic. Because you can see that with the monastic, we live very simple. And we, you know, forgive a lot of things, jobs, money, even family members. You leave your parents, sister, your home, just to be a monastic. And when you come here to stay for 9 days, you maybe miss a lot of things from your lay life. And for us, we stay here, we depend on the lay supporter a lot. So this is usually the question that people want to know, very curious, why you want to be a nun or monastic. So with my answer, you might be very surprised, because my answer would be, it just happened. So, I don't know, it's like when I was young, I already wanted to be a nun. But somehow I've been wrecked with lay life. Went to uni, had a job, lucky didn't have family. So it's easy for me to leave a lot of things behind to become a nun. So, because I like meditate, so that's the first thing that, you know, dragged me into the temple or monastery to practice. And since then, I learned about the Buddha teaching and see how the life of the monastic is doing, very simple. It's really inspired me. That's why I just get more and more understanding about the Buddhism. But because my background, Mahayana tradition, so at that time, when I went to the temple, usually just chanting and charity work, so it's not really what I want. Even I want to be a nun, but it's still not really get me into it. And then I met the a senior Theravada monk, and then another chance I met the Theravada nun. So because with the nun, it's easy for you to talk and get along and know more about what the nun, you know, in the monastic life. So then I decided to go to Theravada, and I was from Sydney, so there was Santi, but somehow it's not really got the connection. And somehow I heard about Newbury, so I decided to come to Newbury. Even I got no information about Newbury at that time. And when I came, I just somehow you have a feeling about the place. And then I started to train as Anagarika, with tradition. I think that the Ajahn Chah tradition, I think this is the only one tradition that we start with Anagarika. Please correct me if I'm not right. So we start with Anagarika, which is we wearing white, shave our head, and we have 8 precepts. Like maybe you are also on 8 precepts. And after 1 year as the Anagarika, we have ordination as novice, which I am now. So we on probation for 2 years. After 2 years, if I well behave and got the approval from my teacher, I will get the higher ordination or fully ordination like the three bhikkhunis here. And that's kind of like complete your ordination. So everyone wants to be a nun or become monastic. They have a very different reason for to be go forth. So that's what happened to me. I'll just like follow the lead, follow my, you can say karma. I hope that was from my past life. Any challenges from your family members? Yes, of course. A very big one. And I remember that I talked to my boss because I at that time I changed the job. And I mentioned to the boss that I want to be monastic. And he's a Westerner, so he got no idea what I was talking about. And then I told my mom, I called my mom on the Mother's Day. Yes. Yes. So I said, hi mom, happy Mother's Day, and how's everything going? You know, because she was overseas. So after all the greetings, say, by the way, mom, I want to be a nun. And there was a pause. Ah, I feel, oh dear. And then we start talking about that. And of course, my mom gave a lot of reason for me not to be a nun. She said, oh, I know this person and my friends, and she was monastic before, and she felt very difficult and disappointed. So that's why she, you know, disrobed. And she keeps talking about not be a nun. So not supported at all. And then we start a bit, you know, tense when we were talking about that. So, and finally my mom said, no, we're not talking about this. Let's stop. So we hang up. And the next day, the boss came to me, asked, so, how was it? And I just burst in tears. I said, I broke my mom's heart. I was so rude to her. I called her on the Mother's Day and just let her, you know, not I want to be a nun. But later on, like 6 months later, that's the first time I went back. And I was still in lay form. And we didn't talk at all about that. We just like do normal things when shopping or just talk about normal life. And just the last day, usually mom just like went to the airport, picked me up and, you know, dropped me to the airport. And when I just about to walk in the custom gate, I said, mom, I'm going to Melbourne. That's all I said. So, and later on, I did like really connect to a family just through my sister and my auntie. But they can saw my picture on the Facebook. So a year later, I came back as Anagarika because as a Chinese or Vietnamese tradition, after you become a nun, you don't bow to your parents when they pass away. So this was the only chance I can pay respect to my mom. My dad passed away, so I had only mom. So I got the permission from the senior nun to go back. And at that time, I still wear bini because I don't know how my mom react to that. So I wearing form, but of course, even you wear the bini, but you can see that it's very short hair or no hair at all. But I just like ignore, and even my mom just ignore whatever. So we really didn't talk about at all about my being a nun. But I think that my mom can see that I'm happy. And always smiling and very charming. Maybe that's how she got it. So, and the same, I use the same technique. Like at the time I say with family, I never talk at all. And the last day, finally I had to do what I meant to come back to do. So I say, just like few hours before I leave for the airport, and I asked, "Mom, please sit down. I got something to talk to you." And when Mom, of course, she had the feeling for that. So when she sat down, and I just started to bow to her, as I found from the internet, I say the first one that I bow, "Thank you for give birth to me." Second bow is to say thank you for taking care of me. And the third one is I wish you with all the health and with all the happiness. So that's three bows I gave to my mom. And surprisingly, what I expected, she said that don't come back. But surprisingly, she said that she talked to a lot of friends and they really supported. And she said that, "Oh, you're very lucky that you got your daughter going forth." And she said that any time that you want to go back, doors always open for you. So that's very touching at that time. And I was surprised. So that means to me that I got the approved for me, for my mom to go forward. So challenge from my family members, yes, of course, my sister cry a lot, my auntie against it, my mom against it, but finally I got the support from my family. And I can see that a lot of monastics, even monks, they when they go forth, of course, they don't want to lose family members. Even we have Sri Lankan support in Newbury. When they heard of someone going forth, they say, "Wow, they're very inspired." But then their kids want to go forth, they say, no, I don't want to." And they... And I remember Bhante Nisarano, when in one of his talks, he shared the experience that he was in a monastery in Sri Lanka, and he was there for the ordination, and one of the ladies just like cried her eyes out and, you know, faint. And Bhante said, "Wow, is he very surprised that the man, you know, remember what to chant in the ordination, because it's very long." And later on, he found out that the lady was the younger sister. So you can see that it's very difficult for the family to accept, because to them, going to be a nun or monastic, it means you lose your son or your daughter. So of course it's very difficult. But if, you know, later on when with your practice and you can prove to them that you're happy, and this is the right way for you to choose and go, you know, for liberation. And you know, you not just benefit yourself, you also benefit for your families, because you can guide them into the path as well. So this is my answer. Thank you.
Talk about it?
Same question.
What was the question? It was a while ago. Oh, why do I want to be a nun? If someone had said 15 years ago I'd have this hairstyle and this outfit, I would have laughed myself silly. Growing up in Australia, pretty much as an atheist, I was always interested in the world and people and why we do things, and I actually studied ethics at university. And then I was given a book, was a single parent, and life was pretty chaotic and I was a bit out of control, you know, life was up and down. And I was given a book and by the Dalai Lama and one by Eckhart Tolle, and I kind of thought, wow, I think this has the answer. So I Googled Buddhism in Brisbane, as you do nowadays, and went along to some places, and I really found the methods helped and the philosophy made sense. My daughter was very happy I got into Buddhism, because she said I was nicer to her. So I thought, well, this really works. And when she left home and we were offered redundancy where I was working, I thought, well, I like
to, you know, do this more. So I went and lived at the centre and volunteered there for a couple of years on and off. And then I just really enjoyed it and just saw the benefits of it. So then I requested to be ordained. So for me, I suppose it was a some personal benefit, but also, as I said, there's also benefit to those around us when we just have a happier mind. And I just thought I could keep working and accumulating money to buy new stuff, but what reason was there I could devote my life to the Dharma? So it just seemed to be an easy decision, although it has its challenges, so along the way.
Why do I want to be a nun? Hard to say. I guess my passion when I was a layperson was very much to serve the Sangha, render services to monks, nuns. And then the opportunity came where I spent a lot of time in Jhana Grove, Bodhiana. And then there was an opening at Dhammasara to go over there to see what it's like. So that's how I kind of started going to Dhammasara. And then I was just giving myself a chance, one day at a time, one breath at a time. From a lay person, shaved my head and then became an Anagarika. And then still one day at a time, one day at a time. And then after 1 year and a bit, okay, I'll try go forth. And this is one, like Venerable Tsongkhapa was saying, now the parents come into, you know, the question time, so the explanation time rather. How do I convince my parents that I want to let me go forth? I had a family, I had a good relationship, I had good career, so why be a nun? I think it's the different kind of happiness that I starting to experience in the monastic life. So I told them, I don't know for sure. So just give me a chance. I'm giving myself a chance. And I'm still giving myself a chance at this time. So can we work together with it? You know, at any time, if I need to turn back or so, they are very supportive of that. So rather than trying to explain everything, I said, this much I know now, I'll explain this much, because I don't know the full picture. So I'll be very honest and upfront. So in doing that, in my days at Dhammasara, I made effort to connect with my parents and my family more than I did when I was a lay person. I'm there, but I'm not there, you know, that kind of thing. So I make effort to connect, to talk to them, to speak at regular interval. So eventually, it's not just about me going forth, it's also for them to let go, to build on the let go. So it was a two-way thing. And then finally, I was able to convince them to come to the monastery to actually have a look where I am. So since then, I think gradually, it's not overnight. It's not like, oh yeah, you'll be a nun, go ahead, you know. But it takes time, takes a lot of investment, a lot of patience. So that's what I put myself. And with that also is the Dhamma coming into the practice. Be patient. Learn to take no and be patient. Go back and see how you can work with the relationship better. So yeah, okay, I better move on because there's quite a question.
This one's a bit similar. It says, to all venerables, what are the challenges after you become a nun? After, not before. It's not entirely different from the challenges that you'll have in lay life. We have our own personal, you know, obstacles, our fears, our greed, our attachment, ill will, you know, all of these things. One thing that I find a bit challenging, which is just coming up, is just, for me, I chose this life to have a very anonymous
in the background at the end of the line kind of life. And I have to do things like talk to people and sit on stage and have the light shine on me while I'm meditating. So, I mean, that's a small thing, though. But I think in terms of, we have that challenge of, like, you know, there's this ideal of, you know, we read the suttas and we have these, you know, enlightened beings, and we are taking on the form as a support for our practice, and just balancing the way we relate to those ideals and the way we relate to ourselves as human beings who are just on the path, not enlightened yet, and also in terms of how to feel that we're, for myself, how to feel that I am living the path with integrity and kindness towards myself. And because sometimes as a monastic, people also project a lot of things onto you. And that's normal. Everyone has that. In your station of life, people will be projecting things. And just how to deal with that in a way that's healthy for myself so that I can continue. And Ajahn Brahm and, I mean, Venerable Hasapanya, they're all very understanding of that, not pushing. And just allowing us space and time to develop, and so that we have the confidence to do whatever might need to be done at some point later.
I think in the interest of time, I'll just go on to the next question, and then maybe when we have time, we'll talk a little bit more, or we just incorporate our answers. Dear Venerable, kindly let us know the typical daily routine for monastic lay visiting meditators at Dhammasara. Okay. For monastics, you can wake up at any time, but if you want breakfast, it's at 6:30. If you don't want breakfast, you come for work meeting at 7:10. But most people do take simple breakfast, and then 7:10 we get assigned work. So we work for between 7:10 or 7:30 till about 10:30 in the morning. What is work? We have routine work like cleaning the toilets, cleaning the meditation hall, cleaning the dining. Then we have project work, which is some of the projects that we do at Dhammasara. Right now is to ensure our property is bushfire friendly, bushfire safe friendly, safe. Safe. So that entails raking, cleaning out all the, cleaning the gutters. So we just had a busy bee recently. And that's very much summer, preparation for summer. At other times, we also have new kuti projects. We're building 4 more new kutis because we have many women who wish to try out the monastic life, and they are still on a wait list to come in. So once we have more accommodation, then we're hoping to be able to open up the door for more trainee nuns to come in. So we're building 4 more kutis. At this point, as we speak, the building is up, the roof is done, the walking path is under construction, so we're getting there. Then at 10:30, we all come back to the hall, dining hall for the lunch ceremony. The senior nun, the abbot, the senior nun, or the nun in charge will be conducting the lunch ceremony, and then we all go for this symbolic pindapata, alms round. We go with our bowl and collect rice from the people who come to give dana. Then we pick up our lunch, come and eat. So this is very similar for the lay visiting meditators. You basically follow what the nuns do in the morning. And they don't go on pindapat, but they just come follow the same timing and then take lunch after the nuns. And after lunch is clean up. Basically, nothing is all your own personal practice till the next day. 2 mornings a week, Monday and Friday, we have morning sit between 5 to 6. Small chanting, the same chant that we do, the Yoso Bhagawa. Then on Wednesday nights and Saturday, we have night sit. Wednesday will be the English chanting. So you have Yoso Bhagawa in English. and followed by a recorded talk by generally Ajahn Brahm. On Saturday night, we have the full Paritta chanting in Pali and also about 1 hour meditation, the whole group. So a balance between a lot of time for yourself and also time together. Okay. Same question. I'll just read out the question. Why did you choose to become a nun? And how was her life like before? I'll skip this. Can't get through all the questions tonight. Is there anything you miss from your previous life before you became a nun?
I haven't thought about this one. When I was a layperson, I went to a teaching and there was this wonderful nun from my tradition spoke, and I'm going to tell a story because I can't think of anything interesting. And someone said a similar question to her about, you know, don't you miss all the things you can do as a layperson now you're a nun? And she said, if you think of samsaric pleasures as like rocks, wouldn't you be glad to get rid of them? So not saying that everything, you know, in life is, you know, horrible and needs to be, you know, gotten rid of, but when you really start drilling down and seeing that we can't get unchanging permanent happiness from external things, you really start sort of not missing them as much. Having said that, I really enjoy food, so sometimes it's hard not being able to eat what I want when I want. But unfortunately, I still see my daughter and I have 3 grandchildren, so our tradition's a little bit easier in some ways that I can still have a relationship with them. I would very much miss them if I couldn't ever see them again. But I can't think of anything at the moment. The hairstyle's really good, great in summer, a bit cool in winter, but you just have a collection of beanies. You don't have to think about what to wear. Highly recommend it. So if anyone's interested, come see the Venerables. They have a wonderful places where they're very supported, so it's a bit easier if you go there.
The next question is the same one. Could you please tell us how a typical day for you looks like? So, yeah. Dear Bhikkhuni, what is the qualifying period before you give talks to public? We would like to hear more nuns' talks as well. Thank you. Qualifying time, qualifying period. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by qualifying. Who qualifies us in a way? But actually, essentially, we take on this training. I'm speaking more for Dhammasara, so this is what I know. Our training starts as a layperson for 3 months, and then if when you have made the decision you want to give try on the next step, then that would be what we call the Anagarika. So you take on more duties and you are closer to assisting the nuns and, for example, getting closer to the monastery business. You also take one thing called the dependence, which means the difference between an 8 preceptor and an Anagarika is Anagarika has one more thing that they take dependence on the monastery. So when you want to go out, you ask permission. When you want to do this, you ask permission. So it's taking your control away from what you're able to do day to day, and slowly, slowly relinquishing that sense of, you know, what you can do as a layperson. So one step at a time. So from that time, you enter the training, and the training continues on as a novice, 10 precepts. So from Anagarika, 8 precepts. You have 8 precepts. You all know 8 precepts. The moment you go into novice, you actually relinquish money. The next two precepts are actually, one is a combine of the entertainment and jewelry, and the other one is the big one, is power or money. Because before, you can just swipe a credit card, make a call to the bank, and do whatever you want. Call Uber, you know, something like that. But now, you are totally, felt like, dependent. So that for me is a big shift in my life, because I could do a lot of things before. So that, you know, sometimes it's a small thing, one precept, but yet big, you know, big shift in the science. So then after that, you after 2 years, like you hear, you're able to apply for bhikkhuni. So bhikkhuni ordination means you take on 311 precepts. The monks have 227. The nuns have more, slightly more. Then, when do you qualify to speak to the public? Really, I don't think there is a specific time in that sense, because the training of the monastic itself is very much the training, this purifying the mind. So at any time, I would say, like you hear from a novice today, you know, inspiring. You hear from one of us. You hear from some others. So it just depends, really. So I don't want to put a time to, oh, after 2 years, therefore you can. Do you switch from 1 year and last day to 2 years, then you can teach? No, you don't. So when you're comfortable, most important is Ajahn Brahma will say, speak what you know, speak from the heart. So that's it. Yeah. We would like to hear more nuns' talks as well. Have a talk to the boss on that. Okay. I was disappointed to learn that women over 50 years old cannot ordain, while men over 50 years can. Surely, this contradicts the progressive and inclusive values that Ajahn Brahm has cultivated in the Buddhist community. Why should a woman be penalized for discovering Buddhism later in life when a man is not? What is the reason for this inequality? I answer. I think I got that. Yeah. The 50-year-old thing is pretty much for Dhammasara. I'm not. Other monastery may have different age limit. Some are younger. Some are 35. Some are 45. So the 50-year-old thing came from the average age of the whole community. So when we have an intake, like who's coming in next, we can't have like all, like what we call in the corporate world, top heavy or bottom heavy. So we try to balance the age wise. So why the difference between men and women here is not discrimination. It's just what makes sense for the monastery at this time. So we are hoping that in future, where they have more nuns monastery, then we can open up the age limit, then more people can ordain. So there is not really a penalized, you know, it's not an inequality either, I would say. It's more what makes sense for the monastery at this time. Yeah. Okay. You can ask Ajahn Brahm again. Okay. Yeah.
Dear All Master Nuns, what inspired you to become a nun? So I can skip this one. Have you ever feel regret? If you're still in brow, of course you still not regret. So I don't know in the future because this impermanent, you don't know. Some people you can see that the monastics, they've been monastic for over 30 years and suddenly something happened, they disrobe. So you actually can't say anything about the future, but at the moment I can tell you that no regret. Is the food we put on your bowl not enough? Are you allowed to go and get more? Thank you for your concern. That's very thoughtful. That's very beautiful. Because as you know that we, at the Buddha time, we just have one meal a day. But nowadays, it depends on the monastery. At here, we have breakfast. Also in Newbury, we have breakfast. So we can say that two meals a day. But what if the food they put in our bowl not enough? Actually, Buddha allowed you to get more food after you don't have enough, because we absolutely know food in the afternoon. Even we have afternoon allowable. Now today we have afternoon allowable. So if you don't have enough food, and then it depends on the community. Like Newbury, we allow cheese, milk, and lollies. But I don't know in the... Yes, sadly that Dhammasara doesn't have cheese and milk, but they can have soy milk. So answer your question, yes, if you don't put enough food in our bowl, yes, we can get more, but not in Dhammasara. Okay. Your name in... Are you warm enough with clothes? At the Buddha time, strictly three robes only. But now today, in here in Perth, you have the weather is more warm than Newbury. In Newbury, we have like 7 months cold. And even in winter, we have snow as well. Very beautiful. You can see all the pictures in our Facebook. We very well support with all the thermals clothes. So, yes, we warm enough. Thank you.
Dear Master, if you want or need to go to see your families, are you allowed? Will monastery give you money to buy a ticket to travel? It's when you ordain, it's not that you're cut off from your families. Of course, you're not living with them, so like as an Anagarika, one might have a bit more flexibility in arranging one's transport, but once you're a novice, it depends on the monastery arranging transport and stuff, or if your family can come. People will go visit their families for New Year's or, you know, from time to time, not all the time, but like that's no problem. That's no problem. In terms of, will the monastery give you money to buy a ticket to travel? Monastery.
I just want to extend on that. If your parents are unwell, you are encouraged to go back as a monastic to take care of them, because we have to care for our parents. So we're not cut off. In fact, we have responsibility for our parents. We don't have responsibility to our children. Funny, eh? Yeah, we care for our parents. Yes, if your family can sponsor you, you get a sponsor, you get a ticket back. Otherwise, you can talk to the teacher and she arrange for a ticket to be purchase for you to go back to visit your family. How does it work? If you need to see a doctor, who will pay the bill? Generally, in Australia, we have Medicare, so most of it is bulk bill. So if we need to go out of pocket, then we normally send an Anagarika, who is a trainee nun, who can handle money, to go with the nun to the doctor and settle the bills, paid by the medicines or pay for the x-ray or whatever you need to. Yeah. So that's why the money that we receive on donation goes to two funds. One is the expense and the other one is building. So anything that goes into the expense fund will take care of the nun's medical expense, dental expense, transport, and whatever expense that we need to sustain our day-to-day life.
Yeah. My turn.
Okay, dear nuns, is there any practice that you done before nuns? I mean, stay, temple, etc. It's very helpful for one who aspire to be a monastic, or even just to have a taste of what monastic life is. You don't have to ordain, no pressure. Come stay at a monastery, experience life in a monastery. It's very different from a 9-day retreat. We work. lots of different, more interactive in the daytime and solitary in the afternoon and nighttime. So then you get a balance of both. So because this is a life, it's not just a short retreat or going into to do a course or something. You're actually living it. So we encourage people to have a short stay in the monastery. Then when you feel comfortable, you can have a longer stay. And if you want to do the rains retreat at any monastery, Bodhiyana or even Dhammasara or even Newbury, just apply in and have a longer stay. And you'll be together with the monastics. So you can have more feel whether this path or this place is correct and feel good for you. Because everybody's different. So you may gravitate to one monastery that suits your temperament or your liking. Not everybody will be happy in the same temple. So it's very encouraged. And also, if you could go shopping for monasteries, like go around the world, and it's very good to compare. For me, like, if you haven't done that, then sometimes you just stay in one monastery, you just don't see the other side, what is like. So then just go stay and you learn a lot from different, even in the same Theravada tradition, the practice is very different. Each monastery has its own what we call the kawat, which is the monastery rules, house rule really. So some monasteries say, oh, you can, like what Venerable Sankapa said, they have different evening allowables from Dhammasara, different, slightly different practice. So then you go, oh, why is that? Just be with it and see how you feel. Is this something that you gravitate to, you like? Yeah, so to answer that question, yes, it's very helpful to visit monasteries, stay, especially stay, because then you feel you're more connected to be there longer time. One question here. What made you want to be a nun? I think we answered that one. And how to apply to be a nun here? I will speak for Dhammasara, and maybe Venerable Sankapa, you can speak for Newbury. So to apply to be a nun, you have to at least be known to the monastery, come and do a short stay, and then eventually when you're ready, sign up to do a longer stay, which is 3 months. So to do that, you sign up for a month first, and during the first month, speak to the abbot and let her know if you want to extend to the second month and the third month. So that's how it works. And after that, then you can put in your application to want to be an Anagarika. Then you go on the wait list for now. We have a list of people who want to be Anagarikas. Factors being, if you're from overseas, you have to go on the overseas queue because of visa. If you're local, meaning you're Australian or you're PR, then you have a different queue again. So that's a bit different for Dhammasara because visas into Australia is quite expensive. And also we have a quota to the Australian government to have a kind of a limit that we, how many people we can take as trainees. We have a combined quota with Bodhiana, so between the two of us, we will have to work within our quota. Yep, so that's
So with the Newbury Monastery, we are quite young. We're just like 5 years old. At the moment, we have like four nuns and two anagarikas at the nun side. And the monks usually is back and forth from Bodhiana. But we open to, so at the moment, it just open for nuns at the moment, for female. And we wait for the monk side being established. Establish and then and see if there's a chance for a male to come and but that's our purpose for that. So to apply to be a nun, we have you can go to our website at Newbury and we have the condition to apply. But at same as Dhammasara, we invite you to come stay with us for a short while. And when you put the application, we have the questions if you're interested to be ordained. And please tick that one so we know that you're interested. And after you stay with us for a while, we to get know to us and we also get know to you. If you still want to go forth, and you can send the interest email to our senior nun, which is Ayo Becker, and let her know that you want to go forth and we make the decision from the nuns community from that. Anything, if you have more questions, please go to our website. We have more details in there.
I think likewise for Dhammasara, the whole ordination process and stay at Dhammasara is all described on our website and the application form as well.
What was one of the most joyful experiences of your monastic life, and what was one of the most difficult experiences of a monastic life? What made it difficult? E.g., was it grief, loss, despair? Okay. Most joyful experiences was after much effort and on behalf of myself and many others, was having the full ordination in March last year to be accepted by the greater Sangha as a full and equal member meant a great deal to me. It really touched my heart and, it was tears of happiness, as Ajahn Brahm says, and the other three Tibetan nuns that were ordained with me, I think they would probably say the same. We really appreciated that people from outside our tradition put in so much time and effort. People flew in from overseas and everything so that we could have full ordination. Oh, I'm getting all teary. Yeah, it meant a great deal that they thought that, you know, we were worth doing all that for. So we hope that we can repay the favour with our efforts. Most difficult experiences? Probably feeling that the organisation that I'm started with doesn't support bikinis and full ordination for women. Because they're quite traditional. So for me, that was challenging in that their beliefs and my values differ. So still sort of working through that process and what that means for me. What made it difficult is because even the Dalai Lama says that we're social creatures, and we all want, you know, to be loved and have a sense of belonging and connection. And that's one of the great things about being a monastic member, is that you have this wonderful Dharma family, and of course with lay people, but very much so with your Dharma brothers and sisters. And so when you feel that you've lost some of that, that was quite challenging. Yeah. So, but, you know, they're not really big things, are they, really? And there's so many other things happening in the world. People are really ill and haven't got food to eat, and, you know, loved ones are dying, and people are being tortured. So when I really think of put it in perspective, me not sort of getting what I want sounds kind of a bit silly. So, yeah. But anyway, that's my answer.
Yeah, so just to add on to that, 10 years ago, if people are aware, on 22nd of October 2009, it was history made in Perth, Western Australia, where 4 Theravada bhikkhunis were ordained here. So this is the 10th anniversary. If you have a chance, come to our website. There is 2 short videos. One is a trailer, this is marketing. But also for everyone to rejoice, it's been 10 years and it's still, you know, work in progress. That's why there's so few nuns monastery in the world. And we are slowly, we are growing, but, you know, more people are getting more aware of nuns, higher ordination, you know, etc., where we stand, where we can be. So, yeah, you have a chance, go to our website. There is a book called Why Not, adapted from you. Why Not Bhikkhunis, really. And then there's a booklet done for the 10th anniversary celebration that has all the people who participate, Ajahn Brahm, Bhante Sujato, Ajahn Brahmali, wrote about the event. And also the video to capture the moments then till now. So it was more like Dhammasara Bhikkhuni Productions from 2009 to 2019 and continue on. Dhammasara was purchased in 1998. So it took that long for what you see today. If those who have been to Dhammasara, so 1998 with one caravan up in the hill, Ajahn Vayama was the first founding abbot. Only later, a few years later, a couple nuns come. So it was very trickling. And then now suddenly you see 16 nuns sitting in the hall, 2 lines. So very rare to have that many nuns in one place, in residence. So thanks to all of you for your support and continuous support. And you have a chance to visit Dhammasara. I have one last question here. Hopefully last, I think. Last. But you can ask more questions, just in case. Can people who are carrier of hepatitis B, not hepatitis, hepatitis B or AIDS, be ordained here? Million thanks. It's actually, we have rules in the Vinaya that disallow people with certain diseases back in the Buddha's days. You can't ordain because one of the things is very hard to support once you are a monastic. So of course 2,500 years later, you know, we have different diseases. Speak to the preceptor, speak to the teacher, speak to who you want to take your ordination with, whether they will accept you. So that's the easiest way for you to clarify. Because any medical condition for that matter, yeah. Because one of the factors of ordaining is not just the for Dhammasara, it's not just the age we're talking about. The age, it's also the factor of health. You need to be relatively healthy to be able to want to be ordained. One of the reasons is also, once you're in the monastery have to take care of everything, like your medical. So it's two-way thing. If the monastery cannot support you, then you'll be in a very difficult situation. So speak to your to the person that you want to take their precepts on, like the teacher, and discuss with the person. So that's probably the easiest way for me to answer that question. I don't have a clear yes or no. Okay, right. Open to the floor if there's any other final questions. Thank you for... Oh, hello, David.
Kind of hoping we'd slide through without that question. Tibetan Buddhism is slightly different in that way to Theravadan. In the West, in Tibetan Buddhism, most of us support ourselves. So many monastics, Westerners, work part-time or they may be teachers at centres. I received a redundancy years ago and I live off that money, and also we can accept offerings, so we can receive those. So I was living at, we do have a one place in Australia that we can live, Chenrezig on the Sunshine Coast. Some people might have heard of it, it's quite big. So I did live up there for a few years after I ordained, and then I moved down to Brisbane for various reasons to our city centre. But unfortunately, that doesn't have accommodation. So we live, you know, on our own in the burbs. So it's quite different for Westerners compared to nuns and monks in Tibet and India and things. They're sort of the more traditional system. So that answer your question?
So we actually have four papers here addressed to Ajahn Brahm. We will park this question for him when he comes back tomorrow. Is that okay?
Okay.
There's two notes that were for me, sort of, so I got it from whoever had written them. Thank you. Yeah. Is there any other questions? It's 9:14. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you for your interest and your attention and your support, not just for the nuns as well, but also for the monks, and supporting each other in the Dhamma, because we all depend on each other to progress along the path. So shall we call it a night? Okay. Shall we call it a night? Yes. Okay. Oh, yes, the sadhus.
Okay, we have to do the sadhu, otherwise he's watching a CCTV from over there. You ready? Sadhu. Sadhu. Ooh. Hee hee hee. One more.
Nice comment. I just wanted to say thank you to this beautiful group of retreatants. Everyone is so caring and kind, and we speak and connect so much through our silence. It's a true gift. Thank you.
Yeah. For every 9-day retreat, Dhammasara generally send two nuns, and then the other two rooms actually from interstate overseas. So that's why you see a different rainbow.